Next up, Senior Research Fellow Kjetil Selvik from the Norwegian Institute of International Affairs will talk about Iran's role over the past 10 years. Kjetil Selvik is a senior researcher in the Research Group for Peace, Conflict and Development. He has a PhD in political science from Sciences Po in Paris and works with the struggle over states and regimes in the Middle East. Selvik has previously been a researcher at the Fafo and Christian Michelsen Institute and has been associate professor at the University of Bergen and the University of Oslo. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I will give a presentation focusing on Iran's regional role since the Arab uprisings. Which I think is a key topic in the sense that Iran is perceived to have increased its influence in the Middle East a lot over the past decades. Also in the sense that Iran has been at the heart of international conflicts in the Middle East, and particularly in its confrontation with the US. So first slide, please. So very contrary to what Bjørn Olav described in Saudi Arabia's case, Iran did not hate the Arab uprisings. Its kind of gut reaction was not to fear them. In a sense, they welcomed the Arab Spring, especially when it happened in Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, and Yemen. And the reason is that Iran itself was, the current Iranian regime was made of a revolution, and it has been used to mobilizing support from below. It has tried to portray itself as the one regime in the region which stands up for what the man in the street thinks about questions like Israel's occupation of Palestine and resistance to the US. So Iran said, let's have this revolution and we'll probably get a better position out of it. Now, the thing is, they did not describe this as an Arab Spring. This was not the Iranian term. Iran's leader, Ali Khamenei, said that these were really an Islamic awakening happening throughout the Middle East and echoing what had happened in Iran some 30 years earlier, during the Islamic Revolution in 1979, where you had this Western-supported regime that was thrown from power from a popular movement and coming with an agenda of combining Islam and the state and also democracy, in the sense that the Iranian regime has been organizing elections repeatedly throughout its history. Next slide, please. Now, Iran's regional influence, its regional strategy for building influence in the Arab region has been based on this idea of resistance first and foremost. Resistance to what? Resistance to the US domination in the Middle East, resistance to Israel, as I mentioned. And this being the core country that is standing up, as I said, for ordinary people in the region. And this has been a good platform for Iran to build influence in the region in the sense that Iran, as you know, is a Persian-dominated country, Persian-speaking country. It's a Shia-majority country, something that could set it apart from the Arab region. But by focusing on resistance and the Palestinian cause, it has opened a door for influence in the Arab region that is bigger than it otherwise would have been. Subsequently, and secondarily, Iran has also used Shia Islam as a way of spreading influence, because benefiting from close cultural ties between Shia Muslims in Iran and especially Iraq, but also in Lebanon, and sort of building influence from below. Third, in terms of military organization, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the Revolutionary Guard in Iran, has a separate division called the Quds Force, which is responsible for extraterritorial missions outside the country, and especially in Arab countries, where it has been training and sustaining and building and supporting paramilitary groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon and various militias in Iraq that are loyal to the ideology of Iran's leader Khamenei. Next slide, please. Now, at the start of the Arab uprisings, you could say that this region was divided into two main regional blocks. It was the bloc Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, and the countries that were aligned with the US in the region. And then you had the other side, led by Iran, that was focusing on resistance to this Western influence. And Iran was the leader, but allied with Syria, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and so forth. The balance of power between these regional blocks had shifted enormously in 2003, when the U.S. led an invasion of Iraq and removed the regime of Saddam Hussein, who had been the main bulwark against Iran and the main enemy of the Iranian regime. So by taking away this regime, it opened the door for Iranian influence. When when Hosni Mubarak's regime fell in Egypt in 2011, the actors perceived this as another step that would shift the balance of power, the regional balance of power, and further strengthen Iran's influence. But of course, then the Syrian uprising happened, and here was the very opposite, an event that threatened to weaken the Iran-led bloc's position. So when Syria, the uprising in Syria spread, Iran was in a difficult position because it had to balance or choose between its two priorities, in the sense that it was supportive of these uprisings and it was in favor of revolutionary movements, and important political players in Iran initially expressed support for the uprising in Syria. But another strand of thought in Iran soon gained momentum, which claimed that this is really not a popular revolution. This is really an attempt to hurt us and shift our strategic debt, because Syria is the linchpin of Iran's strategic deterrence vis-a-vis Israel, especially because it connects between Iran and Hezbollah, Iran's key key ally and Israel's key enemy. And the idea being that if Israel should strike Iran militarily, Iran could retaliate through Hezbollah. So this was this strategic depth, as it's called in Iran, important to lose. And it eventually it turned out that Iran was going to save the regime of Bashar al-Assad no matter what the cost. And they stepped up the game progressively, starting by let's say encouraging Hezbollah to enter the war, and which was important in itself, but when that was enough, it sent its own forces, the Revolutionary Guard sent, and it's quite unusual for the Revolutionary Guard to send its forces abroad like it did in Syria. It also mobilized paramilitary groups of Afghan fighters, even some Pakistani fighters, Iraqi fighters, to fight in Syria, training them, facilitating their movement. And when that was even not enough, it invited Russia to come in, or it encouraged Russia to come in. And Russia came in, and Russia and Iran started a close strategic partnership over Syria. And Iran has really shown that it has been willing to sacrifice a lot for Syria. It has sacrificed... is something wrong with the mic? I hope it's better now. Okay, that's good. So it has lost more than 2,000 troops in the fighting in Syria, and even more of these foreign fighters have lost their lives. Next slide, please. So what has it led to? Well, most importantly, from Iran's point of view, Bashar al-Assad has survived, and the regime has remained. The regime survived this incredible challenge, and so meaning the balance of power, the regional, the linchpin of deterrence vis-a-vis Israel has been saved. Hezbollah has not been cut off, as Iran feared it would be. And I think it's difficult to overestimate the importance of Iranian support for Assad's survival. And of course, this has put Iran in an interesting position in Syria, both in terms of security cooperation and in terms of prospects of economic exchanges and investment in the future. I mean, basically because the Syrian regime is deeply in debt to Iran. Now, on the downside, this has had reputation costs for Iran. To use an euphemism, I mean, this has been a disaster for Iran in terms of how it's perceived in wide parts of the Arab region, because it has contributed to a very, very brutal repression of a popular uprising in Syria. And moreover, it has led to Israeli attacks. And they have increased over the past 2 years, because Israel, of course, is also concerned with this balance of power, the regional balance of power, and said that, hey, Iran is coming out of this Syrian catastrophe in with a strengthened position, we cannot live with that. We have to strike back. And they started hitting Iranian targets in throughout Syria. And then there are also indications that they have increased their sabotage operations inside Iran. Next slide, please. The increase of Israeli attacks on Iran and Syria coincided with ex-President Trump's break with the nuclear agreement, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, in May 2018, where Trump switched from Barack Obama's policy of engaging Iran and making the nuclear deal happen to the very opposite of imposing a campaign of maximum pressure, where the key element was economic sanctions and very, very stiff economic sanctions, which Trump referred to as the strongest sanctions in history, which may actually have been true. Because the US was able to go after any company anywhere in the world that was willing to do business with Iran, and reducing, for instance, Iran's export of oil by some 80%. Over 2 years, it led to a 12% reduction in the Iranian economy. The national currency lost a fourth of its value. And in simple terms, people's living conditions got a lot worse. I mean, poverty increased, the food went up, extreme poverty increased a lot, medicines could not be found, and all this happening, of course, for the last year, at the same time as the COVID-19 pandemic. The political consequence or blowback inside Iran was that President Rouhani became a lame duck, in the sense that his political project of engaging with the West to improve conditions in Iran, to improve international relations with the West and thereby get economic progress, failed miserably and led to the very opposite. And of course, the hardliners who had always been opposed to this idea told him that, you know, we told you never to trust the US, you cannot make a deal with the US, the US is our eternal enemy. So this has discredited the idea of moderation in Iranian politics, which is can be worrying for the future, as we may come back to. Next slide, please. Then Bjorn Olav referred to the conflict between Saudi Arabia and Iran, which has been a major part of Iran's regional imprint for the past 10 years. Just as Israel scaled up its attacks on Iran after Trump broke with the nuclear deal and imposed maximum pressures on Iran, it appears that Saudi Arabia also increased its pressure. At least Iran accused Saudi Arabia of having been behind the terrorist attack in Ahvaz in the fall of 2018, and then a later attack in early 2019 in the east of Iran, terrorist attack. And from Iran's point of view, Saudi Arabia was benefiting or was piggybacking on this U.S. pressure to humiliate Iran, and it has caused a lot of resentment with Saudi Arabia in Iran. For the first year of maximum pressure, Iran sat mostly still. They didn't want to rock the confidence in the nuclear agreement. But after a year had gone, Iran figured that we have to push back. And the pushback started with increased insecurity in the Persian Gulf, attacks on shipping that with people not really being sure who was behind it, but suspecting Iran could have something to do with it. And then the most spectacular attack was the September 2019 attack on the oil refinery of Aramco, Saudi Arabia's Aramco in Abu Qais, Khurais, which the Yemeni Houthi militia took responsibility for, but which many thought that Iran was actually the brain behind. More broadly, of course, the war in Yemen has been a very important part of Iran's conflict with Saudi Arabia, because Iran has been able to lend its support to the Houthi militia at a much lower price than its engagement in Syria, but at perhaps an even greater price, in the sense that it has created a major headache for Saudi Arabia, because the Houthis have basically been winning the war. At least militarily, they are the ones that have done the best, if we can use that term at all with regard to the war in Yemen. But I mean, right now the Houthis are pushing to take control of the Marib province in Yemen, which is the only part of North Yemen which it does not currently control. I mean, if this was to be the outcome of the war in Yemen, then it's a huge strategic gain for Iran. Next slide, please. In 2019, the fall of 2019, popular uprisings occurred in both Lebanon and Iraq. And they were very hostile, especially in Iraq, to Iranian influence. So the protests in Iraq were basically popular protests against the corrupted political systems, the entire political class, and especially the Shia Islamist parties of Iraq, and the paramilitary militias that Iran has been in part supporting. And very, unprecedented since 2003 was that these protesters were very angry at Iran. And as I said, I mean, Iran has been kind of saying that we're the ones who are not afraid of the street. But here in Iraq, for the first time maybe since the U.S. invasion, Iran was kind of a main target for these popular protests, with protesters attacking Iranian consulates in various cities, burning Iranian flags. So a clear indication that Iran's regional influence is also under pressure. And the noteworthy thing, of course, was that these protests were occurring within the Shia segment of Iraq, not among the Iraqi Sunni Muslims or Kurds, which have long had a very tense relation with Iran, but among the Shias, who are supposed to be the main field of influence for Iran in Iraq. Next slide, please. So, to conclude, Iran has increased its influence in the region militarily over the past 10 years. There's no question about that. But I will argue that it has decreased its soft power, and that both the war in Syria, that has been very important for that, but also the protests that I just talked about in Iraq is an indication that it does not have the same popularity as it did. As the Middle East has been caught in sectarian conflict between Sunnis and Shias, it has become more and more difficult for Iran to focus on its resistance to the US and Israel, because it has been put in this category of being the Shia power. So, and if it's a Shia-Sunni battle in the Middle East, then, well, Iran is in the minority group. Moreover, this strengthening of military influence in the Middle East has coincided with a growing dependence on Russia, especially in Syria, but also more broadly in its the fact that Iran really needs Russia's support in Security Council in its conflict with the US. And of course, Russia and Iran have common interests to a certain degree, but not eternally. And Russia is also on good terms with Israel and many other countries, making this dependence a bit worrying from Iran's point of view, which has always been skeptical of great powers in world politics. And finally, there have been huge consequences of war domestically in Iran, and I refer to the economic consequences, the negative economic development. There's also a political side to this, which is the growing securitization of politics in Iran, and the steady rise of military actors, and especially the Revolutionary Guards in Iranian politics. And the possibility growing that in the coming presidential election in June, a person like Dehkan, which you see here in the picture on the right, which is a military commander, could actually win. I don't think Dehkan is a front runner, but we could get a military person in power in as president in Iran. We could get a far more confrontational president, regardless of whether it's a military person or not, than Rouhani has been, and that could bode for even more conflicts internationally between Iran and both the US and regional powers in the future. Thank you.